AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Mother Nature has been relentless. Dozens of tornadoes carved a path through the South. At least 9 people died, 2 in Georgia, 7 in Alabama. Stephanie Brown's brother was killed when a twister swept up the family trailer home near Montgomery.
It's gone, but I lost something more valuable than my home and my possession, and that was him.
More rain is slamming the already soaked West this weekend. The storm system could bring more flooding and mudslides to California, and also the chance of a lot of snow to the Midwest and East Coast, too. Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf.
The flooding that we've had, look for another repeat performance of that, unfortunately. But when it comes to the snow, it gets to the point where it is just mind-boggling how much we're talking about in terms of the potential. This is on top of what we've already had. Some locations could be a few inches, some could get up to feet, some in excess of 6 feet.
A special counsel has been appointed to investigate the classified documents found at President Biden's home in Delaware and a former office. But our Adriana Diaz tells us there are others looking into it as well.
House Republicans announced another investigation into the found documents.
We'll issue subpoenas if they don't respond.
Kentucky's James Comer spoke to CBS's Catherine Herridge.
You have to treat Joe Biden the same way that Donald Trump was treated.
2 Trump Organization companies must pay a massive fine for tax fraud. CBS's Dana Jacobson.
A jury convicted the Trump Organization of 17 counts, including conspiracy and falsifying business records. The $1.6 million fine is just a fraction of the taxes executives evaded, but it's the maximum allowed in this case.
Former President Trump was not personally charged. When you can't pay your bills, it's not good. When the country can't pay up, it's really bad. The U.S. will likely reach its debt limit on Thursday. CBS contributor Javier David on what this means.
You may very well have a scenario that the U.S. will default on its debt. That means bills won't get paid, interest payments won't get made, and it could be borderline catastrophic for the U.S. economy.
Police in Newport News, Virginia, say they learned a school employee was told a 6-year-old may have a gun with him before he shot his teacher. They say his backpack was searched after they got the tip, but no gun was found. Newport News School Board Chair Lisa Searles-Law.
We understand that this has been a difficult and uncertain time for everyone. We are truly sorry.
The NFL postseason starts today with the wild card rounds. 2 games today, 3 more tomorrow, and then the divisional playoffs begin in exactly 1 week from today. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The long-term effects of Wisconsin's redistricting process were apparent in the November elections. A nonpartisan good government group says voters who feel overlooked should not give up. Mike Moen reports.
Democratic Governor Tony Evers won re-election, but Republicans maintained strong control over the legislature. Jay Heck of the group Common Cause points out that Evers maintains his veto power, but he says Republicans still carry a lot of weight, partly because they keep redrawing the maps to their advantage.
There were more votes cast for Democratic candidates statewide than Republican, but the contrast with the legislative elections in the state is so sharp, it almost makes laughable the idea that we have a true representative democracy.
Researchers have said that over the past decade, Wisconsin has produced among the most gerrymandered voting district maps in the country. Heck says voters should look ahead to next year's state Supreme Court election with the hope a less politicized court could eventually revisit the issue. And there could be legislation floated again next year to develop an independent redistricting process. In the meantime, he says the current maps allow a smaller percentage of voters to decide who controls the legislature, leaving other voters behind in fair representation.
Urban areas in Wisconsin have suffered a decline in the shared revenue from the state, even though those people pay taxes.
Heck says that means less support for schools, roads, and other public needs. Analysts say lawmakers representing these areas get packed into boundaries that ultimately diminish their voices at the state capitol. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more,
sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome back to our second hour this Saturday, January 14th, 2023. This is our weekend review of the important stories, the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for staying with me. Those of you who've been with me for the first hour, thank you. Those of us who are joining right now as we talk about more stories in these areas that have animated our national attention during this past week. Spent a lot of time in our first hour talking about the so-called Biden classified documents case, then also about the Trump criminal sentencing matter in Manhattan. We're going to move on now to other matters still evolving and also revolving around our former president. One of them is a matter we have spoken about at great length in the past. The focus of this is a woman named E. Jean Carroll. You may recall that we've spoken again about her now two lawsuits that she has pending. E. Jean Carroll, while President Trump was in the White House, still in the presidency, made the allegation that about 27 years or so ago, Donald Trump, confronted her in a dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman department store in Manhattan and attempted to sexually assault her. She claimed at that time that the encounter lasted about 3 minutes. She managed to escape, ultimately. In the wake of that, she also published some additional information about that, prompting the president, while he is the president in the White House, not only to deny that this ever happened again back in the 1990s, but also saying some fairly scurrilous things about E. Jean Carroll herself, her physical appearance, saying he doesn't know this woman, denying any allegations, and also saying things like, look at her, she's not my type. Things that that we would not expect of any president, regardless of allegations made with foundation or not. That prompts E. Jean Carroll, that is these statements that the president, the former president, makes while he's in the White House, to sue him for defamation, basically saying that when you said publicly that I lied about this event back in the 1990s, you're defaming me. You're suggesting to the world that I am lying. And as a result of all sorts of machinations that get into the application of something called the Federal Tort Claims Act and the scope of responsibility for actors in the federal system,
hey, including this is Matt from Design Yard,
the President of the United States of America, as a result of all of that, E. Jean Carroll has a lawsuit that, again, pending first in the New York State Court, ultimately removed to the federal court, again, based upon this attempt by the former administration to substitute the United States of America for Donald Trump. Following all of that has to do with civil procedure, civil practice, and the federal law. The upshot of that is that inside that federal case, now pending in federal court, again, partially on appeal to the appeals court on this issue of substitution, while that's going on, the district court judge, the trial judge, says, you know what? I'm going to permit discovery to proceed. And I'm going to permit the discovery to include a deposition, an oral deposition of the former president. And that happened on October 19th of this past year. At the time, you may recall, we chatted a little bit about that happening. We didn't have a transcript. This past week, the transcript of that deposition in that initial defamation case was released over the objection of the former president's lawyers, over the objection of Donald Trump, released by the district court judge. And among other things, again, the former president repeats in that deposition, we know it was October 19th, took about 5.5 hours, took place at the former president's Palm Beach residence. He once again denies knowing anything about her. Along the way, says things like, "I know nothing about this nut job." Those words from the former president in the deposition of October 19th, goes on to say that, of course, from his view, consistent with his perspective, his statement of denying the allegations, this never happened. And along the way, takes account of the litigation itself. And in a long exchange with the attorney for E. Jean Carroll, who has this opportunity to ask him questions during the course of this deposition, the former president says, "This is a false accusation. Never happened. Never would happen. I posted. I will continue to post," as he did about 6 days or so before this deposition, denying this once again. He says, "I'll continue to post until such time, and then I will sue when this is all over. And that's what I'm really looking forward to doing," the former president said. "I'll sue you too," he says to the attorney, "because this is, how many cases do you have?" He says, "Many, many cases. And I know that statements were made that you made. Keep Trump busy, because this is the way you defeat him, to keep him busy with litigation. So I will be suing you also. I'll be suing her very strongly as soon as this, but I'll be suing you too." Again, making reference to E. Jean Carroll and the attorney. A strong denial, which he has within his rights to do, but nonetheless taking on the attorney and promising more lawsuits in response to this lawsuit by her. The attorney named Kaplan, responds to all that by saying, "Are you done?" And the former president says, "Yeah," and goes on to say, "Is there anything in particular that prompted you to make this statement last week?" Again, this posting about the continuing denial. And the president says, "Yeah, her false story, and that I have to waste a whole day doing these ridiculous, responding to these ridiculous questions with you." Again, that coming out of the unsealed, again, released document, this transcript of the deposition taken by E. Jean Carroll's attorney of Donald Trump back in October. That case still continues, of course, the release of that document, again, over the former president's objection. But it's also a part of a second piece of litigation that we've also talked about here on this broadcast. We know that in the wake of the filing of that lawsuit, and perhaps in part, but not entirely in response to that, New York passed a law. It's called the New York Adult Survivors Act. Basically, it revives any lawsuits of this type, alleging sexual assault, rape, other things like that, horrendous, heinous crimes like that, if in fact the statute of limitations has run. And plainly, this is an allegation about something that happened back in the 1990s, 27 years or so ago. Plainly, the statute of limitations is run. This New York Adult Survivors Act gives petitioners, gives plaintiffs like E. Jean Carroll and others the opportunity, a limited window, to bring new lawsuits, to bring new charges, to encourage criminal prosecution for these same events under this new law. And she has done just that. And that lawsuit is also pending out there, much related to the same fact pattern as we just described earlier, but nonetheless, a parallel lawsuit. Needless to say, the former president's lawyers are attacking that, attacking the constitutionality of that New York law. We will continue to monitor all of those cases as they continue to go forward civilly and perhaps criminally as well in New York. We've got more. We've got more also focusing upon the former president. And this, again, goes back to Washington, D.C., goes back to the circle of advisors. I sit at the top of the two-hour program here this morning that we're going to talk about Rudy Giuliani, and indeed we are. We know well Rudolph Giuliani, former U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, former mayor, sometimes referred to as the as America's mayor in the wake of 9/11, came to the not only the description of what happened on September 11th, but also rallying, if you will, much of the country around the heroes of that day, the tragedy of that day. We also know, however, that in the wake of that, Rudy Giuliani has done an awful lot to destroy his reputation that was otherwise in fairly good shape, if not spectacular shape, in the wake of his service to the federal government, to the city of New York, and I would offer also to the people of the United States of America. Since that time, he has offered his own advice, his counsel, his direction to the now former president. He oversaw, for example, President Trump's legal challenges to the 2020 election, making persistent claims that the voting had been marred by widespread cheating, irregularities, a series of informal legislative hearings, you may recall, in key swing states around the country, going around the country saying that, in fact, the 2020 election had been stolen, baseless conspiracy theories that a cabal of international actors had hacked into voting machines produced by a group called Dominion Voting Systems. They have turned around and sued Rudy Giuliani for those statements, also alleging defamation, all kinds of things that he has done, as you know well. Well, just this past week, we learned for the first time that back in November, the United States Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia served a subpoena, a grand jury, a criminal subpoena on Rudy Giuliani. And we know, of course, that this predates the appointment of Jack Smith, the special counsel for the January 6th matter, also the Mar-a-Lago matter. And so we know, again, that at some point in the not-too-distant past, Rudy Giuliani is also now the subject, if not the target, of the grand jury, the federal grand jury, summoning him there to provide testimony. The significance of that is that this is the first time that evidence has surfaced suggesting that Mr. Giuliani himself is directly embroiled in this inquiry into the part that Donald Trump played in the events leading up to January 6th. More particularly, it appears from reading some tea leaves here that as a part of this investigation, again being pursued by the Department of Justice through the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia, that the Special Counsel's Office is examining this group called Save America PAC, among other things, the inner workings of Donald Trump's fundraising vehicle, the Save America PAC. The record subpoenaed from Mr. Giuliani could potentially include some related to payments made by that PAC, according to some people who have provided some information to some journalists out there. We know as well that some subpoenas issued in the past several months have asked for records concerning Save America. The House committee that investigated the January 6th matter also looked at that. And so, again, significant information that this continues to be the focus, a federal focus, a criminal focus, targeting documents that Mr. Giuliani has. We're going to talk more about that and other matters right after this break.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lierley helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 33. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. 27 tonight, mainly cloudy skies expected. Partly cloudy tomorrow, highs around 40. 44 Monday, with a chance for scattered rain showers. 41 Tuesday, chance for showers continues. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
The Shop.
And we are back. We are talking again about major stories from just this past week, focusing a bit this morning once again upon our former president and the many lawsuits, criminal lawsuits, civil lawsuits, other proceedings involving him. Even though he no longer occupies the White House, he has announced, as you know well, that he is a candidate for the presidency in 2024, will continue to be the subject of a lot of focus. And that is true this past week as well. Right before the break, I was talking about the latest woes being confronted by his continuing advisor and senior aide, Rudy Giuliani. Among other things, I mentioned that Mr. Giuliani is facing this defamation lawsuit again from Dominion, this group that was responsible for the voting systems company, responsible for many of the systems that legitimately and professionally and carefully monitored and ensured that our voting is accurate and has integrity to it. Giuliani had alleged that the voting machines, as I indicated before the break, were used to rig the election system, and that despite some internal memorandums, of course, from the Trump campaign, that those are outlandish claims and that everybody knew they were. Nonetheless, Rudy Giuliani proceeds with them. Dominion has turned around and sued him on that basis, alleging that Rudy Giuliani carried out what they describe as a viral disinformation campaign about the company, made up of, again, as they said, demonstrably false allegations, and did this to enrich himself through legal fees and his podcast. That is a problem for Rudy Giuliani. In June of last year, you may recall well that his law license was suspended after a New York court ruled that he had made, again, demonstrably false and misleading statements while fighting the results of the 2020 election in that forum. And beyond that, almost too numerous to count, he is also facing similar disciplinary charges from local bar officials around the country, including in Washington, D.C., all of those significant for anyone who is a lawyer, anyone who is not a lawyer, also much concerned about criminal exposure. Plainly, the news of this past week that he has been subpoenaed by this grand jury, undeniably, Jack Smith, the special counsel, has a folder, an electronic folder, a real old-time folder, that has Rudy Giuliani's name on it as at least a subject, if not a target, of his investigation too, certainly for January 6th, arguably for Mar-a-Lago. But Rudy Giuliani in a whole lot of hot water, as they would say, not only with respect to his bar licenses, but also maybe even more importantly, his criminal exposure in these various areas, continuing to monitor that as well. And speaking of January 6th, we have spoken in the past about the prosecutions of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers in federal district court in the District of Columbia. We know that those are resulting in criminal convictions for a lot of those individuals, and that most recently, as a part of the Proud Boys charging and prosecution, a trial underway now in early 2023 against the Proud Boys, including their leader, a fellow named Enrique Terrio. Well, just this past week, as I indicated earlier, that trial, for a number of different reasons, following jury selection, suspended while other things happen. And one of those things actually has to do, once again, with one of the attorneys involved in that case. A federal judge in Wednesday ruled, in connection with this Proud Boys trial that, again, will resume soon, that former President Donald Trump's telling the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by, remember that phrase, can in fact be used by the prosecutors, by the criminal prosecutors, by the assistant U.S. attorneys in a trial that is in fact going to resume fairly soon against Terrio and the Proud Boys. Now, where does this come from? You remember that that statement in question there, it came during a presidential debate in 2020. Remember this? When Donald Trump was asked by a moderating him, Chris Wallace, you know him now, he's now part of CNN, used to be a part of Fox News, asked the future and now former president if he, Donald Trump, would condemn white supremacist groups. And during the course of that presidential debate with Hillary Clinton there is, I'm sorry, with Joe Biden there, the former president, the perhaps a future president, we never know.
CBS News Brief. People are
said that, and Joe Biden specifically mentioned the name of the Proud Boys as a part of that response, that engagement with Chris Wallace. And it was then during this 2020 debate with Joe Biden that Donald Trump said, Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. He went on to say this. He said, but I'll tell you what, somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. Well, during the course of this now present prosecution of the Proud Boys for their involvement in January 6th, allegations of what? Of seditious conspiracy. The prosecution wants to use that phrase, that tape, if you will, of the former president calling upon the Proud Boys to, in his own words, stand back and stand by as evidence of their intent, as evidence of the reason for their being in Washington, D.C., having been summoned there, this is the prosecution theory, by the former president to do exactly what they did, which is cause the mayhem, the destruction, the seditious conspiracy that resulted in what we saw on January 6th. And the judge this past week said, yes, I'm going to let the prosecution use that snippet of that debate from 2020 with Joe Biden as a part of the Chris Wallace exchange there. In rejecting the arguments, Judge Kelly, who is the judge who is presiding over this case, cited in particular a post after the debate from one of the defendants in this case involving the Proud Boys, and said that the Proud Boys chairman, Enrique Terrio, that read, standing by, sir, standing by, sir. Again, the judge said, you know what, that's a specific response by Enrique Terrio and the Proud Boys, the defendants in this criminal case, to whom? To the former president. And for that reason, it comes in a very significant, important evidentiary ruling by the judge there, an implicit affirmation of the enticement, the incitement, if you will, that this judge sees in the former president doing just this. We'll chat more about that, other matters, on the docket of America right after this break.
There ain't no bad guy. There's only you and me, and we just disagree. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Oh, oh.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
CBS News Brief. People are digging out after tornadoes killed at least 9 people in Georgia and Alabama. This woman says she barely survived.
We just wrote it out. Me and my daughter-in-law were screaming prayers. Just please, Jesus, keep us alive.
President Biden on the defensive over the possible mishandling of documents marked classified from when he was vice president. CBS's Weijia Jiang.
The White House
President Biden himself knew about that first batch of documents November 2nd. The election for midterms happened less than a week after that.
A Virginia school board is apologizing over the shooting of a teacher by a six-year-old inside a first-grade classroom. Parents are demanding more security.
While we're waiting for these metal detectors to be in place, what else are you going to do? Are you going to put a police presence at the schools? Are you going to put a security guard there? Are you going to make the school's single point of entry access?
The teacher is recovering. CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey, Joe, what do you got for us today?
In reference to Lindsey Graham, I was amazed at his comments where he said if Trump is indicted, there will be riots in the streets. Lindsey Graham was a JAG officer, and in order to be a JAG officer, you have to pass the bar. Was a JAG
officer. I'm sorry, he's a JAG officer? I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, to see a lawyer head for the rat hole instead of acting like a person with a backbone. Wow, what a profile in courage, huh?
Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.,
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels, said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underle said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Staying with me on this Saturday, January 14th, 2023, here on Morning Cannolis, we're talking about the Proud Boys trial resuming soon in a district court in Washington, D.C., and the significant, seemingly insignificant, but really significant evidentiary ruling by the presiding judge that the statement by, at that point, President Trump, candidate Trump, Proud Boys stand back and stand by, and the response given to him by the leader of the Proud Boys, standing by, sir, that all of that can be introduced as evidence of seditious conspiracy as those charges go forward in the federal district court in Washington, D.C. Why is that significant? Again, it's an evidentiary ruling. It's a part of the overall case. It's not the entire case, but I identify this as significant because of this. A jury in America is about to be presented in the coming days and weeks with evidence that a sitting president of the United States of America expressly motivated, encouraged, urged, and indeed maybe even incited a white supremacist national organization, those are the Proud Boys, to stand by, to prepare to violently interfere, to overthrow the peaceful transfer of presidential power. That is a significant matter. That is the implicit, if not explicit, finding in this evidentiary ruling coming out of the Federal District Court just this past week. We will certainly continue to monitor that trial, talk more about that in future broadcasts. Recognize as well that there are more Oath Keeper trials also coming up. There are still more trials of a group now approaching 1,000 people for their particular on-site involvement in January 6th. Those prosecutions, those sentencings continue on a regular basis in 2023. And then, of course, as we know, based upon what we've discussed this morning and in other broadcasts, the larger focus on who designed all this, who put it all together. Was the former president himself, the president at that time, responsible for, as Liz Cheney said, lighting the match that caused all this to happen? What about other people, like the former leadership of the Department of Justice, the associate attorney general, who was almost named the attorney general by the former president, a fellow named Jeff Clark? What about people like Rudy Giuliani? What about people like John Eastman, who crafted this overall scheme? Others involved, that the focus plainly of Jack Smith, who is looking at the overall determination of whether or not there are people who are responsible at the highest levels for causing January 6th. We'll continue to monitor that and talk more about all of that as well. And in that connection, in connection with riots at the location of legislative activity, we'll look south for a little while to Brazil. You know well that just this past Sunday, a mob stormed the nation's halls of power, of legislation in Brazil. And just this past week, as a result of that, Brazil's Supreme Court, a different system than the one that we have here, Brazil's Supreme Court says it's going to investigate the former president, Jair Bolsonaro, for inspiring the far-right mob in Brazil that invaded and ransacked that country's Congress just earlier this week. The Supreme Court and presidential offices were also overtaken by that mob. And the decision just yesterday by a Supreme Court justice, his name is Alexandre de Moraes, approved a request from federal prosecutors again in Brazil to include the former president, Jair Bolsonaro, in this expanding investigation into the anti-democratic riots that happened on January 8th. Sounds awfully familiar, doesn't it? Probably inspired by what happened in our country in January 6th, 2 years earlier. But the decision obviously illustrates this very aggressive approach that Brazilian authorities have taken in response to those riots. Quickly arresting about 1,000 rioters there. And beyond this, again, the Supreme Court, in a system, again, different than ours, through this Associate Justice, Supreme Court Justice de Moraes, making this finding that the investigation should include any attempts by the former president to stir this up and to cause it in the first place. Very little question probably out there in the public domain that Bolsonaro inspired some about 5,000 people who were at that protest that turned very violent this past Sunday. They carried signs, for example, again, in the public domain that referenced conspiracy theories about Brazil's electronic voting machines. Again, sounds very familiar to what happened here in America, right? Mr. Bolsonaro had long peddled these theories that the election itself was the result of fraud and that his political rivals in that, including the successful president now having taken office, were guilty themselves of fraud. That, however, is similar. It's also different. Bolsonaro's post-election actions contrast those of our former president, Donald Trump. Bolsonaro largely stepped into the shadows since losing the October election. And as you well know from reports, has recently suggested that his followers actually move on. He sent some of those messages. And most recently, he departed for Florida, where he is today, the subject of some inquiries of the State Department about how the former president of Brazil ended up in Florida. Some significant differences in what happened after these riots of just this past Sunday, Bolsonaro, somewhat different from Donald Trump, nonetheless, doing an awful lot of things prior to that time to stir up the tumult, to cause the riots. Now, as here in America, all of that, the focus of an investigation by criminal prosecutors in Brazil about the involvement of the now former President Bolsonaro into events leading up to the tumult of just this past Sunday at the Congress and the other legislative and executive offices there in Brasilia. Continuing to monitor that as well, history being lived in reality in the moment, both in the United States of America, but also around the world. And finally, as we go into our final moments here and segments here on our morning broadcast, I promise we're going to talk again about the Supreme Court. We spent an awful lot of time, I think appropriately last year, talking about the United States Supreme Court, things on its docket. And we will spend a lot of time, probably in May and June, talking about some of the major decisions, 10, 12, maybe 15 different decisions the Supreme Court will be issuing on a variety of different issues, including things like the Voting Rights Act, including on the authority of state legislatures to decide voting results, including environmental laws and many, many other issues that we discussed in the past. The Supreme Court has continued to be, in 2023, active on the bench and off the bench as well. Let's talk about at least two, if not three, things that happened just this past week coming out of the Supreme Court docket. We know it continues to entertain oral argument. It's approaching right now about 60 cases overall that it has taken under its wing to review. And it also is making decisions about those cases that it will not review, that it has decided not to grant certiorari, not to ask for the lower court to send the record up, not going to be reviewing those lower court cases. One of those cases comes in the wake of a major case that was decided by the United States Supreme Court last year. Last year, this major case having to do with firearms and the Second Amendment in particular. You may recall well that in a case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, the High Court last summer struck down New York's prior concealed carry gun law. But a 6-3 majority vote said that the law prevented law-abiding citizens with ordinary self-defense needs, that's the language of the Supreme Court, from exercising their Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms in the public for self-defense. And just days after that ruling, striking down the New York law, the governor of New York, a woman named Kathy Hochul, you've seen her a lot on television and the media generally, convened a special session to pass a new law. This is called the Concealed Carry Improvement Act, and she did that on July 1. The Congress, the legislature there in New York did that on July 1. The New York law, however, again, in the wake of Bruin, came under immediate scrutiny, immediate attack, as gun owners said that it was in direct defiance of the Supreme Court ruling under Bruin and promised that they would take this up on appeal. And sure enough, in the wake of Kathy Hochul's convening this extraordinary legislative session, she said, you know, to combat a gun violence crisis. What happened was that this matter then got appealed, got brought into the local district court there, a district court in Syracuse, New York. And a judge named Glenn Sutterby blocked many aspects of the new New York law, 184-page opinion he issued back in November. Sort of drew, if you will, in the methodology of Bruin that was decided by the Supreme Court and struck down this new law that Kathy Hochul and the New York legislature had implemented. Said that the new law's good moral character requirement, along with some other disclosures that were called for by the law, including the identification of family members and some social media accounts, all of that, he said, violative of Bruin, violative of the Constitution. Also halted the law's restrictions on carrying guns, among other places, in places of worship, public parks, zoos, buses, theaters, and establishments serving alcohol. So a huge defeat, if you will, in New York for this newly enacted law in the wake of Bruin. Well, what happens after that? A unanimous 3-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Second Circuit, that is the circuit court responsible for overseeing district courts in that area, put Judge Sotheby's ruling on hold and said, nope, don't go ahead. Do not stop the implementation of New York's law. A lot of double negatives there. So the Court of Appeals basically reinstitutes the Kathy Hochul and legislative law, permits it to go ahead while the appeal, the substantive appeal, goes forward before the Second Circuit. And then what happened, prompting the news of just this past week, the plaintiffs in this case, again, challenging the new New York law, brought the entire matter to the Supreme Court. And they said in particular that the good moral character requirement of the new law is no less subject, they said in their pleadings, to the unbridled discretion of licensing officials and makes the licensing process even more difficult than it was before. And its ban on guns in sensitive places, they went on to say, encompasses almost the entire state. Designed the allegations in their appeal to the Supreme Court, not as a public safety measure, but rather as a political statement demonstrating New York's contempt for this court's decision in Bruin. Those, again, the allegations made by those people seeking to have the New York law overturned. And so this comes to the Supreme Court. And just this past week, the Supreme Court on Wednesday of this past week, issued a brief unsigned order, no reasons behind it, don't have to do that, that allowed New York to enforce, for now, this new law placing strict limits on guns outside the home that was enacted, again, in response to this landmark ruling in June under Bruin. So the Supreme Court, a majority of the Supreme Court members, say the New York law can continue to be in place, not with any specific statements justifying that. However, even as the Supreme Court permits that to go ahead, their basis, presumably, in this is that at some point, the Court of Appeals, again, the Second Circuit, now reviewing all of this coming out of New York, they will issue a decision. And plainly, the Supreme Court invited, if you will, an appeal of that decision from the lower court to the Supreme Court on the substance of all of this. Basically, the Supreme Court saying this past week, let the lower court decide this, and then we'll take it up after that if you choose to appeal it. Significantly, however, along the way, two justices of the Supreme Court, not surprisingly, Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas was the one who wrote Bruin, said that the law presents novel and serious questions. That is this new York law, plainly again inviting this appeal, added that the appeals court should address those questions first and should do it promptly. And again, statements made by these two kind of addendums, if you will, to the brief unsigned order saying, we're not giving you any ruling on the substance. We're letting the lower court of appeals decide this case first. And after that, we will take a look at that. And also affirming once again that lower courts generally should take a close look at Bruin and the opinion written by Clarence Thomas for the majority in deciding on the legitimacy of other gun laws out there. Significant statement by the Supreme Court just this past week. We'll hear more about guns down the road from the Supreme Court. And right to the break, a couple of more cases pending in front of the Supreme Court, some action before them just this past week. Stay with us for some reporting on those cases too.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
My Shiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 33 this afternoon under partly cloudy skies. South winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Mainly cloudy skies tonight, 27. 40 tomorrow, partly cloudy. Mid-40s Monday with a chance for scattered rain showers. Cooler Tuesday with highs in the low 40s. Chance for showers continues. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
In our final segment this morning, we're talking about your United States Supreme Court and actions it took just this past week in deciding to take some additional cases, eight in particular, and also saying no to some other cases. Among those cases it is said no to, it's not going to be having any hearing on a case called Brunson versus Adams. We have not talked about this case before. It's marginal. It's fringe. There's no jurisdiction here. So the Supreme Court did the right thing. But in this lawsuit, an individual whose name is Rayland Brunson claimed that fraud had invalidated his vote for Donald Trump in 2020 when he cast his ballot in Utah. The case was previously dismissed by the lower courts because there was no jurisdiction. Brunson's suit in particular named all 387 members of Congress who voted to certify President Joe Biden's election and called for them to be all thrown out of office, along with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, our vice president, and be banned from ever running again. Thankfully, in this case, Brunson versus Adams, the Supreme Court this past week said, nope, we're not hearing that. The decision of the lower courts to get rid of it based upon lack of jurisdiction, basically affirming that and making it go away. A wise decision, a good decision, important to indicate that the Supreme Court is in fact addressing some of these cases and making the right results, issuing the right kinds of decisions when it comes to really frivolous lawsuits of that kind. I mentioned just a moment or so ago that the Supreme Court's also just this past week granted certiorari, basically said, yes, we will have hearings on as many as eight different cases. Just yesterday, I described those cases, identified them, and ordered briefing, and is beginning to set oral arguments in April for eight additional cases. We're going to talk more about some of those in future broadcasts. This morning, in our waning moments together, wanted to highlight just one of those. Again, one of those cases. It involves a former postal employee, and the justices in particular in this case, in which they're going to hear the merits of this, will consider what specific accommodations employers have to make for religious employees. Again, the significance of this, the Supreme Court, as we know well, has taken up a lot of religious cases, including at least two in the past year, the past calendar year, involving both the state of Maine, remember also the football coach out west who is praying with his team. All of these religious cases, the focus of a lot of attention by the Supreme Court in recent years. They've taken another case. This one comes, again, in the wake of these claims by a former postal employee that he has been discriminated against under Title VII. And in particular, this particular individual has sued the Postal Service for failing to accommodate his request and a federal judge with respect to his religious views. In particular, his name is Gerald Groff, G-R-O-F-F. He said the Postal Service could have granted his request that he be spared Sunday shifts based upon his religious belief it's a day of worship and rest. He brought this lawsuit under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. We've talked a lot about that particular statute in the past. That statute, that civil rights statute, does prohibit workplace discrimination of various forms, including based upon religion. It appears from the facts of this case, again, before the Supreme Court now, that Groff had worked as an auxiliary mailman in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, about 2012 to 2019. At that time, he had resigned. He was a non-career employee, and his job was to fill in when other workers were not available, including on weekends and holidays. Initially, his supervisors apparently were not, did not ask him to work on Sundays, but that situation changed somewhere around 2015 or so. That's his allegation in his complaint. Due principally, interestingly, the requirement that the Amazon packages that the U.S. Postal Service was itself delivering had to be delivered on Sundays. And based upon Mr. Groff's request for an accommodations, his managers had for a time arranged for other postal workers to deliver packages in his place on Sundays. That continued until about July of 2018, when they could no longer accommodate that for various reasons, also a part of this lawsuit. And as a result of Mr. Groff's refusal to do that, he was disciplined in various ways, ultimately resigned, but maintains once again that because the Postal Service failed to accommodate his views about his religious position, that he should not work on the Sabbath on a Sunday, that that's in violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which, again, implicated in many, many cases involving employments. The federal judge, again, reviewing this matter initially, said that the Postal Service had, in fact, acted properly, provided reasonable accommodation, and that offering anything more would cause undue hardship, that very important language, undue hardship to the employer and his co-workers. And interestingly, the Philadelphia-based Third Circuit Court of Appeals, we talked before about the Second Circuit, this was a Third Circuit case, agreed in May of last year with that lower court ruling. And so it's very significant here that we've got a decision made by a district court and then an appellate court finding that Mr. Groff's appeal of this basically is termination, his firing, his leaving because his supervisors failed to accommodate him, that that was not meritorious under the Civil Rights Act of the 1960s. Groff in particular, the reason why this case is important, not only for his claims, of course, we're going to get another statement by the Supreme Court about the meaning of the First Amendment, both the Establishment Clause, presumably the Exercise Clause. More specifically, we're going to get interpretation under Title VII about reasonable accommodation. And we're going to find out more about what the Supreme Court means when it talks about undue hardship under Title VII. There's a case called Trans World Airlines versus Hardison, 1977, that basically says that employers should indeed grant accommodations to employees when they can do so, but that if it imposes an undue hardship upon the operation, the conduct of whatever the office is, in this case the Postal Service, that that accommodation does not have to be granted, does not have to be extended to the employee. And the court back in 2020, when it had a 5-4 conservative majority, declined to hear sort of a similar case involving an employee at Walgreens who was a Seventh-day Adventist who requested that he not work on Sunday. But at that point, the United States Supreme Court decided not to take that case on. Now this current Supreme Court has said, yes, we'd like to take a look at this. We're going to determine whether or not this undue hardship concept should in fact be applied to this particular case involving this former postal worker named Gerald Groff. More importantly, we're going to determine whether or not this 1977 definition of undue hardship should be
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify.
Continue to look at all those kinds of Supreme Court cases in the future, future events of the Supreme Court, including some of those other 8 cases that the Supreme Court granted cert on just this past week. We'll take a look at those and more. Join us for those future discussions here on Morning Cannolis. Appreciate, as always, your time with me the past 2 hours. Always terrific to get your phone calls, your comments, your questions right here as we continue to take a look in America at the great stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice. Have a great week, everybody. Take care. Listen to us again next week in this same time segment.
expose you to opposing views.
We've mentioned, inflation is going to be an issue. Let me ask you this. What would you like to see Donald Trump do if you were here? What did you suggest Biden do to address the inflationary pressures we're facing right now?
I can't tell you that because that would be something you could counter and defeat Trump with, or the Republican Party. So tell you.
You think Trump's taking strategy from you on talk radio, Lou?
I mean, you're no Kid Rock, Lou.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.